angry as anyone.
This is Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscoen. There have been a number of high-profile public apologies this fall. Speaking to a congressional committee, Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius said this about the glitch-plagued rollout of the healthcare.gov website.
With the flawed launch of healthcare.gov. So let me say directly to these Americans, you deserve better. I apologize. I'm accountable to you for fixing these problems, and I'm committed to earning your confidence back by fixing the site. We're working day and night, and we'll continue until it's fixed.
In an NBC interview, President Obama apologized to the people who are losing their health care plans in spite of his assurances that they could keep them.
I am sorry that they are finding themselves in this situation based on assurances they got from me. We've got to work hard to make sure that they know we hear them and that we're going to do everything we can to deal with folks who find themselves in a tough position as a consequence of this.
Broadcast journalist Lara Logan admitted making mistakes in her 60 Minutes program about the Benghazi attacks. She had relied on a story given to the program by Dylan Davies that was false.
When we discovered the account he gave the FBI was different than what he told us, we realized we had been misled, and it was a mistake to include him in our report. For that, we are very sorry.
Well, all these goofs and gaffes got us thinking about good and bad apologies, why it's so hard to say I'm sorry, and why some people are more forgiving than others, and we have two guests. Joining us by telephone is Lauren Bloom, author of the forthcoming book, Art of the Apology, How, When, and Why to Give and Accept Apologies. This is her second book about apologies. She's also an attorney and an ordained minister. And Lauren Bloom, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Also with us and joining us here in our Philadelphia studio is Edward Monte, Clinical Director at Centra Comprehensive Psychotherapy and Psychiatric Associates, also a founder and principal of the Family Solutions Group, and he's a lecturer in the Graduate School of Social Policy and Practice at the University of Pennsylvania. And Edward Monte, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty.
And to our listeners, if you have any questions or stories about apologies, accepted or not, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Lauren, we played those three apologies to get the show started, and I thought Kathleen Sebelius did the best one, if I can say that, in that she said those words, I'm sorry, and she accepted responsibility for the problems with the healthcare.gov site.
I agree. I think it was the best of the three, both for both of those reasons, and also because she has promised to do better in the future, unequivocally, and I have every confidence that she will.
And the idea is that a sincere apology needs to be sincere?
Absolutely. It needs to be sincere, and it needs to be perceived as sincere by the people who receive it. I think the essence of an effective apology is sincerity. Without that, an apology falls flat.
What do you think, Edward Monte? Is sincerity at the heart of an apology?
Absolutely. I think sincerity and empathy, that you really do care for the people that you've hurt. And I think here it's something that's being shown by the fact that she spent so much time talking about how to fix the problem. And we're going to do something different. It's not just saying, I'm sorry, and leaving the hurt in place.
Well, and Lauren, we're playing obviously very public apologies because those are the ones that we can get on tape. And if you're an elected official or you're a journalist or a celebrity, it seems you might be apologizing to the whole country, I guess, in the case of the president or Sebelius, or to your viewers in the case of Lara Logan. Are public apologies different from more intimate private apologies?
In some ways, yes. And I think one of the challenges that public figures face when they make a public apology is recognizing that they may be speaking to several different audiences. So, for example, someone who's making a public apology to a fan base may also have done something that hurt personal friends or advisors. So at that point, the apology becomes sort of multi-layered, and it becomes important to hit different audiences different ways.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. I think that Lauren's absolutely right. I think that the intimacy factor of hurting someone you love carries with it something much more specific. Mm-hmm. And the care that's involved is many layered. I think it's hard to do this apology to strangers at all the levels that Lauren spoke of.
Well, and we are in such a snarky time, Lauren. I mean, it seems that if anyone shows any kind of vulnerability, whether it's social media or anyone else, we all seem to pounce on that person.
Yeah, as you say, I think snarky is a really good word for it. We do live in snarky times, and we live in times where the instant you do anything publicly, someone's going to put it on camera, and all of a sudden it's all the way around the world. And so in some ways, I think we could all stand to calm down a little bit. But at the same time, if people choose to become public figures, they need to recognize that this is going to become part of their life, is that every time they do anything wrong, someone's going to take it, someone's going to tape it, and the next thing you know, the whole world is going to be talking about it. So knowing how to make an effective public apology is part of being a public figure these days.
And public people are, I don't think, any different from anyone else, but it often takes too long for them to admit mistakes, and perhaps it's just because they live in such a spotlight, Lauren.
Well, I think that's part of it, and I think also public figures have a lot of trouble, especially politicians, have a lot of trouble admitting to error, so that when they do make a public mistake, they tend to kind of hope it's going to blow over. And unfortunately, in these times, public mistakes don't blow over.
No.
They just churn and get bigger. So the sooner they're dealt with, the better off everyone tends to be.
And we often hear, Edward, you know, if you were offended by my comment, then I apologize. When that word if is thrown in, what
right.
does that do to that apology?
Well, it usually negates it. I think that if the meaning of that if is, I am most concerned about hurting your feelings, whether or not I agree with you that I actually did what you think I did, but the worst thing I could do if I care for you in an intimate relationship is that I hurt you. So if I think, you know, if I wore this shirt to hurt you and that's what you think, I'm sorry you think that way. I've got to come to the connection between us first. And then later I can debate whether or not sort of a crazy thought or
yes.
I wasn't really responsible. But the upfront, I'm sorry you're hurting. If it's done as an avoidance, you know, if you're hurt and I'm sorry you're hurt, but then it's not going to be sincere.
Right.
And you have to really look at the caring and the empathy underneath, the belief that you've actually need to apologize.
Well, we all make mistakes,
absolutely.
but there, you know, there's so much. I don't know, is shame too strong a word?
No.
No,
it's not too
strong. I mean, it's sort of at the heart of.
Lauren can speak to this, but it's a very shame-based culture. And how trusting are we of our public figures or even the people across the room? I think people have gotten snarkier, but we don't trust people. We assume there's something evil underneath. And really, do people wake up in the morning trying to figure out how to hurt you?
Mm.
Or are they just stupid and careless? And it's usually the assumption of really malignant intent that is projected onto people that may not fit. Or it may.
Well, Lauren, do you see shame as sort of at the root of either making, I guess, the root of the mistake and then the difficulty of making an apology?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, unfortunately, it's become kind of a game that we play in this country where we elevate people to almost godhood. And then we yank the pedestal out from under them. I call it the blame and shame game. But it comes down to asking people to be more than any human being can be. And expecting anyone who sets foot in the public limelight to be perfect, which, of course, none of us are.
Mm.
And so when politicians say, I'm sorry if I hurt anyone, and that's one that politicians are especially prone to,
yes.
they don't want to admit to error, because if they admit to error, then their authority goes away.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, particularly with politicians, we elect them to office because they stand up and say, I know how we all ought to live. Let me come and write your laws. And then, of course, when they prove to be as human as the rest of us, the argument is that they were hypocritical in the first place. I don't think it's fair, but I also think that the culture we've established is so critical and so blaming and shaming
mm-hmm.
that it becomes very difficult for decent human beings to run for office.
Well, that's a troublesome comment. Anything you want to add?
No, I think she's absolutely right again, and I think that translates into intimate relationships. I think our expectations of each other are so elevated, so extreme, that people can hurt us very easily because we have them on a pedestal. And what are the realistic expectations in any relationship that people actually will mess up? And then can you forgive them? I really do see apologies as very relational. You know, you will apologize to someone more readily if you feel it's going to be accepted. I think the shame goes back and forth. And you're not going to apologize quite as readily to someone who you don't trust, even though they may not trust you.
Right. And it's about, in many ways, taking risks. I mean, you have to own up. Right?
Absolutely.
You have to own whatever you did.
Right.
If you lied to them or you right. gossiped behind their back or something like that. And
right.
I mean, that you did that.
Yeah. Yeah. And as long as you own up, really own up and not defend. I mean, the big thing is that you end up talking about their feelings, not about your position at first. Later, you can talk about your position mm-hmm. when the intimacy is restored. But you can't start there because they're not going to buy it.
So you have to say, I'm sorry.
I really did this. And if I didn't, I'm still sorry. I really hurt your feelings. It's the last thing I want to do. Then when they're back being somewhat your friend and trusting you, mm-hmm. you can wrestle out the particulars of it.
Do you see it that way, Lauren?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think this is one of the reasons I say that one of the steps in an effective apology is to make sure that you really express appreciation to the other person for what they mean to you and how why they're important in your life. And also give them an ample opportunity to tell you their side of the story.
Mm.
Now, that can get trickier with public apologies because you're apologizing to hundreds, thousands, maybe millions of people. But there still needs to be some way for the people who are receiving your apology to tell you exactly what you did wrong and why it affected them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could see what if you feel really badly about doing something, apologizing, Edward, and just wanting to get it over with and just
right.
let's move on.
Right. Right. Well, even Obama, I wrote down the note that he said, you know, we heard you. And I think that, however, it wasn't as good as Abilia's apology. I thought that was a nice line, that you are really heard. We know how we have hurt you. I know how I've hurt you. Tell me more about it. Then we can move forward, because the entire goal here is the reunification of our relationship, whether it's public to audience or intimate one-to-one. And we can't do that unless we're heard.
Unless we're heard.
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 Which means we have to listen, right?
We have to actually listen. But more than that, we have to care. I mean, that you really do care for the person you're apologizing to. And it all sounds good, but it gets very messy. I mean, do you really give a darn about the person you're apologizing to? And if you don't, it's not going to be a very sincere apology.
Well, let's take a break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking about apologies, what makes a good apology, why some are more believable than others, why it is hard to say I'm sorry, and why some people are more forgiving than others. We have two guests. The voice you just heard, Edward Monte, clinical director at Centra Comprehensive Psychotherapy and Psychiatric Associates, again, a lecturer in the Graduate School of Social Policy and Practice at the University of Pennsylvania, and founder and principal of the Family Solutions Group. And by telephone, Lauren Bloom. She's an attorney, an ordained minister, author of a forthcoming book, Art of the Apology, How, When, and Why to Give and Accept Apologies. And yes, indeedy, we've got phone calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. And you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY. Doctors at Penn's Depression Research Unit have been studying the causes and treatment of mood disorders since 1964 and are currently performing research to develop improved treatments. Symptoms may include mood swings, low energy, and low motivation. Initial evaluations are offered to determine those who are eligible for treatment. More about Penn's Depression Research Unit at 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462.
Next time in Studio 360, the uncanny power of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial.
David C. Fell.
Anyone can relate to a name. If you've given birth to a child, if you've held a baby in your arms, if you've baptized someone and say, I name you, this wall will break your heart.
Kenneth J. Powles.
Next time in Studio 360's American Icons from PRI and WNYC.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, new music by talented female vocalists from Yuna to Tiny Hearts. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. Chemicals,
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We're talking about how to apologize with our guest Lauren Bloom and with Edward Monty, and an explosion of phone calls at 1-888-477-9499. Edward, we were talking during the break, and you just were underscoring this notion that apologies are about relationships.
Right. Well, it's something I'd love to hear from Lauren about this. Lauren, just the idea that apologies fit into relationships, so that you have to have forgiveness on the other side, and that we don't always feel comfortable apologizing, yes, generally, because we're sort of shame-based, but specific to the people that you've hurt. And how righteous does the other side get?
Mm.
And I think really looking at whether it's the audience and the culture feeling very righteous in their anger or the person you love, it's very hard to apologize knowing it's not going to be received.
Right. Well, and that raises the question, Lauren, about accepting apologies and how to do that, I guess, graciously and not necessarily righteously.
Well, I think it starts with recognizing that we all mess up. And, as Edward was saying, I think we live in a very self-righteous culture, and I think righteousness feels good, but only briefly. I think in the larger scheme of things, we all need to recognize that everybody messes up now and then. And I think you can accept an apology, recognizing that even though you may still be upset, it's better to do that for the sake of the relationship. Mm-hmm. And then over time, the hurt heals and things get better.
Mm-hmm.
You see this in the case of celebrities, where very often they'll make a public apology and then disappear for a little while. And ideally, they not only disappear, but while they kind of remove themselves from the public eye, they do some social service work or they make a contribution to a worthy cause or something. And they're gone long enough that we decide that we miss them. And then they come back and things are fine. Hugh Grant's a great example of that. He sort of embarrassed himself with a prostitute at one point, did a charming apology on late night television, and then disappeared for a year or so. And after a while, people came around to, it was really none of our business. He's a fun actor. We miss seeing him, and he was back in movies and had pretty much redeemed himself.
And life goes on. But is it important to forgive, Edward?
Well, I think it's very important to forgive, because what you're doing is you're choosing, if it's, a sincere apology, not a superficial one, you're really choosing. I looked up a quote that I used to love. I used to know quite well, and I found it, which was Gandhi saying, forgiveness is choosing to love rather than holding on to the righteous anger. And that you return to that. Even Hugh Grant, people go back to go, oh, that's what I loved about him. That was so cool. And it's remembering what you loved about the person, and is that more important than your righteous anger? And it's very important to forgive, otherwise you don't have a relationship. Sometimes you simply can't, and you don't have a relationship.
Because some things are unforgivable.
People cross a line. But for day-to-day living, for most of us, no. Right. Forgiveness has to be part of how we love people.
Lauren, do you think it's different for men than for women to apologize?
I'm always reluctant to answer this because I get a cascade of anger from people.
I bet you do.
But honestly, every time I get this question, I am told that women, if anything, apologize too much and men have a little more trouble. And I think a lot of that has to do with the culture in our country that still requires men to kind of be macho and never admit to error. Frankly, I think it puts a tremendous burden on men. And I think it's a shame because, honestly, when an apology is delivered and accepted and forgiveness follows, it's tremendously freeing for everyone. And so I would hope that at some point as we move forward as a culture, that it'll be easier for both men and women to enjoy that benefit.
Well, Lauren, you should know that when I asked you that question, Edward Monty was nodding yes, so you're not alone. Go ahead, Edward.
Very good, Lauren. I'm very proud of you as a man. I think you're absolutely right. I think the burden on men is that we have this ridiculous standard. We're pretty much valued for what we do in our authority, which is ridiculous, and that we're not valued for our good hearts, so that we have to hold on to. You said earlier that, people don't like to apologize, men particularly, because we lose our authority. And I think that's it, that's about all we have in this culture is our authority and our perceived power, which is, again, ridiculous, and we get frightened of losing that. They usually say you'll apologize when you feel as though you have nothing else to lose. So if I feel I have a lot to lose, I'm not going to say I'm sorry. And it's so sad for men because, we drop dead saying, I don't have to apologize.
Well, it's interesting you say that. Both of you say that because I remember interviewing a coach who had at one point in his life coached professional men. It might have been soccer. And then he started coaching women. And the thing that shocked him the most was how much women on the field apologized to each other. Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
So cordial.
and he,
I apologize. Yes.
And his was like, suck it up and you don't have to do that. And maybe perhaps I'll toss this to you, Lauren, is that there can be this sort of over apologizing, I guess, that just becomes knee jerk.
Well, it does. And, honestly, that's every bit as ineffective as refusing to apologize at all. But it is very much part of our culture. My daughter is 10 years old, and lately I hear her saying, I'm sorry, constantly. Mm-hmm. Even for things she had nothing to do with it, I keep having to stop her and say, honey, it's okay. You're not responsible for the fact that it's raining. But it is just something that we encourage our daughters to do, and I think it's a shame because I think it undercuts our power just as much as it undercuts a man's genuine power to have made a mistake that everyone knows about and to refuse to apologize for it.
So under-apologizing, over-apologizing.
Right, yeah. And what men have to learn is that apologizing actually gains power. It doesn't lose authority. It feels like it does. Right. And it terrifies us because we're very shame-based. But it actually gains something. There's something humanizing. How many times you wish a man in your life or a public figure would just say, I screwed up. Mm. I'm sorry. Immediately they're elevated. But they rarely do, at least not up front.
Yeah, go ahead, Lauren.
Well, and actually, I have to say, this is somewhere that I think President Obama is usually very, very good. I've seen him apologize on and off throughout his career as president, and generally he nails it. And so I was a little surprised that it took him as long as he did to get out there on the problems with healthcare.gov, because usually he's Johnny on the spot with a very clear, concise apology. And I suspect it's because he's been dealing with so much criticism here in Washington. But it's a shame because that's something he does very well, and I think mm-hmm. he models well how a powerful person can apologize and build a better relationship with his base and process.
I wanted to, and this is picking up something you said and you've written about, Lauren, but I'm going to toss this to you, Edward, which is about timing. I mean, picking the right time, perhaps the right place to make amends or to apologize for something. How important is that?
Well, I think it's very important. I think that doing it, obviously, sooner rather than later, but doing it, as you said earlier, once you understand what it is you're apologizing for, I think that the overall empathy and wanting your partner, if we're talking about intimate relationships, not to be hurting, the caring, the natural caring there, to be nice to each other, so I really care about it. But I also want to hear specifically how I've hurt you. Mm-hmm. So it's not just a blanket, I'm sorry, but about what? And did I mean that? And if I did, I'm sorry. If I didn't, I'm sorry as well, but can we talk about it later? So I think sooner rather than later. But you can't do it too soon without hearing what the hurt is or it feels superficial.
And you have to think through. I mean, I would assume you have to sort of think through what you did and what you're sorry for.
Absolutely. You have to, apologies are only good if you really believe you've done something. And then secondly, if you believe in them. And I think the belief in things is far more powerful than just the rote recital of, gee, I'm so sorry. I think it really is believing that you're connected and you have the power to hurt.
Well, and Lauren, we can spend a lot of time and energy being defensive, blaming the other person. I mean, I certainly have done this in my life, and that takes up a lot of time and frankly, psychic energy.
Well, it does, and it also can just destroy an apology. I mean, we've talked a little bit about, I'm sorry if I offended you. Let's talk about I'm sorry, but I wouldn't have done X if you hadn't done Y. At that point, you're blaming the other person, and all you're doing is inflicting a second injury. So while I think there's always a temptation to self-defend and to justify when making an apology, even an explanation needs to be delivered very carefully because all it really does is put the blame elsewhere. And if you do that, your apology is just going to go right out the window.
Absolutely. I think the thing, though, that I want, Lauren, is just I want the person to be upfront and to apologize immediately, as close to immediately as they can, and be genuine. But the expectation when you're in an intimate relationship is that at some point, if I take responsibility for my part, you'll take responsibility for yours down the road. And we'll have that reciprocity. It's so often that you apologize and someone says, thank you. you wait.
And that's not enough, you're saying?
It's not enough. And you just, after a while, want to go, no, really, I'll take back my apology. Thank you. Because it's not enough. I want something back for that, even if it's, yes, thank you, but, and maybe I had a piece of it as well.
Right. Or
sure.
Yeah, go ahead, Lauren.
But even at that, someone has to go first.
Absolutely.
And while I completely agree, you know, unfortunately, Marty, I'm afraid you've got two guests who are in violent agreement here.
No, that's okay. I don't mind.
While I completely
don't apologize.
Agree that
I didn't apologize. Did you notice I didn't apologize?
Exactly. I'm sorry, Lauren. Go ahead.
You know, I also think it's very fair to say, thank you, I hear you. I'm not quite ready to come back with my side of it.
That's great.
Can I sit with this for a little while?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's not something that we teach people to do either. We've become such an immediate culture mm-hmm. that we expect everyone to say, I'm sorry, oh, that's okay. And if you do that, then yes, there's that sort of transactional element to it. But the hurt feelings may still be there. So I think there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, thank you for your apology. I appreciate it. Give me a day. Mm-hmm. And then let's talk again. Because I just need to sit with this for a while.
Well, we need to get to our callers. That's Lauren Bloom. She is an attorney. She's an ordained minister. And she's the author of a forthcoming book called Art of the Apology. Also with us, Edward Monte, clinical director at Centra, Comprehensive Psychotherapy and Psychiatric Associates, a clinical psychologist here in the Delaware Valley. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499 and emails at radiotimes@whyy.org. Let me get Terry to join us. Terry, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. I just love this show.
Thank you.
It's so important. I have two teenage girls at home, and we're often talking about apologies. I'm very good at it because I've made oodles of mistakes in my life.
Good for
so
you.
I've apologized often, but I try to teach my kids that an apology, in order to be effective, has to generally come with a plan to make amends. And even if they don't have a plan in place, that it would be a good idea to offer that you're thinking about a plan on how to change things so that whatever the offensive act was doesn't happen again. And the other thing that I wanted to bring up that I'm hoping somebody will talk about and address is how much more painful it is when an apology comes through as a non-apology.
Yes.
Because then it's a double wound when somebody says something like, I'm really sorry you feel that way, or in the interest of the holidays, let's let bygones be bygones. When there's no real acknowledgement of what was done wrong, it just hurts twice and it generally ruins relationships.
Well, Terry, I appreciate the call. Let me put the last one to you, Edward, about the sort of the wound of the non-apology apology.
Well, I think that what you have to look at is the level of remorse. I mean, in the work that people do with intimate violence, the turning point of intimate violence is there true remorse? And that divides up normative sort of bad behavior and sociopathy. I mean, there's a point where if you don't have a conscience, if the person has hurt you, and then on top of that they go, well, I'm sorry you're hurt.
Yeah.
What are you doing with this person in your life at some point? You really have to look at the fact that there isn't that genuine empathy and therefore genuine remorse. So it's a much bigger issue than that event or that betrayal.
And Lauren, this whole notion of amends, making amends.
Oh, it's critical. You know, it's one thing when you injure someone, whether it's a private injury or a public one, you need to do something to make amends. I thought eBay did a perfectly marvelous job on this with the apology that they made recently when someone posted Auschwitz memorabilia on the eBay site. Now, that was contrary to their policies. They could have done nothing at all, pointed the fingers at the guy who did it, but instead they said, we are sorry, took it down, we will not tolerate this, and then made a sizable donation to an appropriate charity.
Huh.
That was a great way to make amends and to demonstrate that eBay really meant what it was saying when it made its public apology.
So is it important to get a gift for somebody? Are you saying that, Lauren?
No, actually, I think gifts are loaded if you really want to know the truth. And the reason being that a gift can come off as a bribe, especially in the setting of a less than intimate relationship. You know, I tell people about an incident where a friend of mine was given flowers by a male coworker who had insulted her. And, you know, it just didn't come off quite right.
Yeah.
I do think it's right to give something. But what that thing is going to be very dependent on the circumstances. Maybe it's time. Michael Vick has given hundreds of hours to talking to the community about dog fighting and why it's wrong. And he does that in conjunction with the Humane Society. And there was a lot of discussion at the Humane Society about whether or not to allow that because they were concerned about what that would do to their reputation. But ultimately, it's given him a chance to give back to the community on the issue where he misstepped. And I think it's been a very effective way to make amends.
Well, we're talking about Michael Vick, who plays for the Eagles here in Philadelphia. Edward, do you want to respond?
Well, I was just going to say the other piece is if you continue to see this dynamic as relational, you've gone into an emotional debt when you've betrayed someone. And I think between people, it's absolutely fine to turn to them and say, what do you need from me to forgive me? How do I pay off this debt? And it's not fair if someone has hurt you to say, basically, you owe me. And you go, how much? And you go, I'm not going to tell you, but you owe me. So you really do need feedback. I'm fine with people saying, look, tell me what to do here. And if I can do it, I'll do it. Let them lead so you're not buying them flowers and further offending them.
What about the workplace? And yes, many of us have very close relationships at the workplace, but they're people who are, you know, colleagues or mm-hmm. distant colleagues. But things can happen at work.
Things can happen at work. And I think that's, again, an indication. I'd like to hear from Lauren on it. Just the indication of what do you need? Because you're not sure the level of intimacy. Really, apologies are very personal, intimate things. Mm-hmm. They can go very wrong if you're not careful, particularly on a work site.
Well, and I'm also thinking, Lauren, at work, you know, there are people that are above us in station and below us in station, and that can kind of complicate this relationship and whatever apology we might issue.
Well, it absolutely can, and I think it's one of the sad things about our culture that too often people only apologize up and not down.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think that anyone that you work with deserves an apology when you step on their toes. And I think one of the things that can happen, too, is that there's a tendency to make public mistakes and then apologize in private, which doesn't necessarily solve the problem. But I think the best workplaces are places where anyone and everyone is free to admit to error, apologize for it, and then work together to make things better. Mm-hmm. You know, as a boss, I try to keep my door open always so that if somebody on my staff makes a mistake, I may watch them a little more carefully for a while to make sure that they really got the message, but I don't want them to feel that they can't come to me and apologize.
That's interesting, Edward. And we're almost having a break about this, you know, the difficulty of apologizing down to people below you.
Well, again, is it a sincere apology if you're only apologizing when there's some good for you? If I apologize up because I'm afraid I'm going to be chastised or fired, how sincere is it? If I offend someone beneath me, the only reason to apologize is because you understand you've hurt them. There's no bonus for you. So that's one of the best apologies, when there's really not a bonus for you. It's just out of pure empathy.
Let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We're talking about apologies in this hour of Radio Times. And again, Edward Monti, Clinical Director at Centra Comprehensive Psychotherapy and Psychiatric Associates, and Lauren Bloom, the author of a forthcoming book called Art of the Apology, How, When, and Why to Give and Accept Apologies. And this is her second book about apologies. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499, 1-888-477-WHYY. And email radiotimes@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. This is music that captures the exuberance, the promise of a great nation. The Philadelphia Orchestra, under Manfred Honeck, performs Dvorak's New World Symphony, and Christian Tetzlaff plays Mozart's Turkish Violin Concerto. Tickets at 215-893-1999 or at philorc.org today. This Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the Kimmel Center, Dvorak's New World Symphony with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
On the next Fresh Air, Allie Brosh talks about her autobiographical blog, Hyperbole and a Half. She describes it as stand-up comedy with drawings. But her most popular posts were about the depression that left her emotionally numb.
I would sort of have to consciously control my facial expressions because I wasn't feeling enough organic emotion to generate them naturally.
Join us
this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
The waiting after Typhoon Haiyan.
I think the scariest thing was really the last time we did hear from them, my uncle's house was completely gone. completely blown away.
Philippine Americans holding out hope and waiting for word. Grief and worry along the Pacific Rim. The latest on the destruction and heartache in the Philippines. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Edward Monty and Lauren Bloom about why it's hard to say I'm sorry, but why it's so important. And we've got a bunch of phone callers. And we also have an email from Ed from Doylestown. How can he apologize when you're the innocent of the accused front and you don't think your transgression was a blameful one? The idea is that you're being accused of something, but you don't think you did anything wrong. Should you apologize? Should you not apologize? I'm looking at you, Edward. And
I don't think apologizing is copping to doing something wrong. I think apology has to do with empathy for the other. So I'm really sorry if I hurt you. I would never want to hurt you. Please understand that. Can we later talk about whether or not I feel I did something? But it's a very personal thing.
Yeah.
I just don't want you thinking I would do that. And I am sorry if you do think that way.
What do you think, Lauren?
I think it's absolutely possible to apologize even when you believe you've done nothing wrong for a couple of reasons. One, you may want to salvage the relationship, and that's a reason to do so. Also, we can always do better, which means maybe I think what I did was fine, but the other person has noticed something I didn't, or I could have done something entirely different. So, yeah, I think certainly saying, you are clearly upset, and I am so sorry. Can we talk about it is very legitimate.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, obviously, you're learning about something about right. that other person that maybe you didn't know.
Sure.
Yeah, and you can do something different the next time. And just teach me about you and what your sensitivities are. If this hurt you, wouldn't have hurt me, but it hurt you. I want to take that seriously, and I'll try not to do it again. And if I do, just know it's something we can talk about.
Let me see what Emily from, looks like Winmore, has to say. Emily, go ahead. You're in Radio Times.
Hi there. I have a question about teaching children about apologizing and, you know, little children, and about how lots of times you're on a playground or at school or you're having a play date and there's an incident and, you know, you're in a situation where your kid has to sort of apologize on the spot, right? You haven't had a chance to explain to them why they need to apologize, what it means, what it's about. And I feel like a lot of times kids apologize in ways that are either empty or insincere, or it's just sort of a rote practice.
Well,
you know, it has no actual meaning to them. You're just explaining to them, you have to, you know, tell whoever it is you're sorry.
And you have to do it, obviously, on the spot as well. Emily, you are not alone. I think every parent has felt some version of this. And because you're a psychologist, Edward, I'm going to toss that first to you.
Okay. I think the idea is baby steps, really, that if we start with a rote apology, even though cognitively they may not understand it, that's the beginning. It's okay. I don't mind if the four-year-old goes, sorry, without really getting it, or the six-year-old. By the time they're 11 or 12, we really want to have them to incorporate the empathy for others, that you're really apologizing because their feelings in the moment are more important than yours. And that's okay. One needs to learn how to share. One needs to learn how to make room for others. Starting in a rote way is an okay way to start.
Lauren, let me throw something else on the table here having to do with doctors admitting mistakes. Mm. And, of course, the fear, that the threat of some kind of a lawsuit. But I also remember doing some research on this, which is that if a doctor does admit a mistake, then they are less likely to be sued. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how, if we're throwing I'm sorry into the legal medical mix, where you come down on that one?
Oh, I think it's the best thing since sliced bread. And honestly, I wish that the rest of the culture, and particularly the business community, would take a page from the medical profession. You know, doctors are healers. And you're right. The legal profession tends to start from don't admit anything, make your opponent prove everything, which means lawyers kind of have a knee-jerk reaction to tell their clients not to apologize. Mm-hmm. But that was really offensive to the medical community because doctors, when things go wrong, and they do, have wanted to be able to step up and talk to their patients and their families and apologize. So what has happened over the last few years is that several states have adopted slightly different variations of apology statutes, which essentially say that if a doctor says sorry, then that will not be used against them in court. Mm-hmm. And what that's done is, as you say, Marty, already stopped a lot of litigation. It's made it a lot easier for the doctors in the hospitals to sit down with families and say, all right, a mistake was made. We recognize this. We want to make things right. What do you need? And come to legitimate and, I think, healing resolutions with the people who were injured. And that also allows them, when they do run into the rare frivolous lawsuit, to really defend themselves very vigorously. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. I wish the rest of the culture would catch up with it.
What do you think?
No, I totally agree again. I think
that a lot of agreeing. Don't apologize.
I can't apologize. I won't. What I find really fascinating when they talk about malpractice, and God knows in our field we worry about it.
You kind of grimace when I
grimace. I go, oh, my God. No, but the malpractice is that people get sued less when there is a relationship, when you're perceived as being, again, empathetic and connected. Even if you make a mistake, the lawsuits are reduced. So if you go in and you don't establish a relationship and then you make a mistake and then you deny it, you're the enemy. Mm-hmm. If you're part of the group, if you're part of the intimate other, people, it's very hard to sue people that have been kind to you, who have been nice to you, and they see as human beings and not authority figures.
Let me see what that looks like. Steve from Williamstown, New Jersey has to say. Steve, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I recently had an incident with a client of mine. I'm an insurance broker, and I sit down with people in their homes and go over their insurance, and I've been doing it for a number of years, and when, we had some problems getting their policy issued. There were bumps in the road, as sometimes there are, and in the process, you know, there were some miscommunications and misunderstandings on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And in any relationship, there's equity on both sides. Now, I've been doing this for too long to have made a simple mistake such as misquoting them on their policies. And in the process, I ended up losing them as clients, which I genuinely regret because I was eagerly looking forward to representing them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I really don't feel as though I had done anything wrong, and I genuinely feel as though their situation is improved as a result of us meeting each other.
Steve, if I can just jump in here, and it sounds like you're wondering whether is the customer always right in these kind of business transactions? Is that sort of at the heart of your question here?
Yeah, I mean, I want to preserve my own business, but
sure.
I also want to preserve my self-respect out of this.
I hear you. Let me toss that first to you, Lauren.
The customer is not always right, and the problem is, of course, in insurance, you're dealing with some very personal, very intimate details about people's height and weight and health and lifestyles, so it gets very touchy. I think in the sort of situation you're describing, there's nothing wrong with, after a little time, writing and saying, or dropping an email or even leaving a voice message or whatever, saying, you know, I really regret that things went that things didn't go as well between us as I would have liked. I would welcome the opportunity to sit down and talk with you about that. If you're open to having that conversation, please be in touch with me.
Hmm.
And so that, you know, they can think about it too now that things have calmed down a little bit and maybe decide that you were right. You did a good job for them and you deserve another chance.
What do you think, Edward?
Well, and I think, Steve, the other piece of that is, and if they don't respond well to that, you've missed a bullet. And I think you need to step away and lower your expectations that everyone is going to see you as a fair and generous guy. I think, again, how difficult are they if they're holding on to their righteous anger after you've done the work and they're not even considering that maybe it was a misunderstanding? So if they're that black and white, they may not be a safe client to work with.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, I have to agree. I tell people there are clients you don't want.
Right.
You know, and that's a tough thing to hear, particularly in a down economy. But the truth is, there are people who are out there looking for people to sue, looking for people to blame, who mm-hmm. are very attached to their anger, and they're not easy to work with.
Right.
Good luck with that. Steve, thanks for the call to Radio Times to see what Jillian from Townsend, Delaware has to say. Jillian, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I want to kind of get the men off the hook here, I guess, for a bit.
Thank you.
Being lack of apologies or whatever. I wanted to address something that I don't know if perhaps you all have experienced. To me, I see a generational lack of apology. I know I'm more part of the baby boomer generation, my parents being more of that World War II era. And I'll tell you, it is a long road back to ever get an apology out of that generation. And I know
which
that,
one,
you know,
Jillian, which generation are we talking about? The World War
II? Yeah, the World War II.
Okay.
You know, that kind of generation versus, say, us baby boomers and younger. They just really hang in there and can't get those words to topple out of their mouth. And I don't know if any of the research or what have you has spoken to that. But I do find that as a phenomenon that seems to be germane to my peer group, that we, you know, literally talk, you know, sit around and talk about this sometimes, that there will never be an "I'm sorry" or "oh my gosh, I got it wrong" or whatever that way out of that generation in error making.
Well,
I don't know if anyone could speak to that.
Well, Jillian, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Lauren, have you found that from some of your research for your books?
I have found that from some of the research for my book. I think some of that, too, though, is that culture is changing, and I hope over time for the better, where it's easier for us to apologize now than it was 20 or 30 or 50 years ago. So when you're dealing with people for whom that wasn't part of the culture, I do think it's harder, yeah. Mm.
Well, and again, if you think about in that generation, people gain power by looking more and more perfect and more without secrets, without flaws. I think that that has changed over the years, and you're not really looking at Father Knows Best where everyone knows what they're doing. We can't admit that, but that was very difficult back then.
Yeah.
You really survived by virtue of what you knew and being right or wrong. And that's not the case anymore,
Jillian,
quite as much.
Yeah, Jillian, I appreciate the call. Let's see what Tony from Wilmington, Delaware has to say. Tony, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey, good morning,
good morning,
folks. I just wanted to say that, you know, I drive a bus in New Jersey for public transportation, and when I mess up somebody's fare, I instantly look them in the eye, say, "Oh, I'm so sorry, let me get that right." And it disarms any kind of tension or anything, and I never have problems on my bus. Been doing it for like 7 years. So I just wanted to add that to the conversation.
Well, Tony, your passengers must love you because, and I'm looking at you, Edward, go ahead.
Well, Tony, the thing that I love about it is there's nothing better than a kind father who is loving and giving and not chastising. The assumption with men is that we're going to attack. We're not going to take responsibility. We're going to blame. And the wonderful part of you in that job is that they come on, you're there to take care of them, and you're kind and giving, which we assign mostly to females. It's just a wonderful thing to see.
Well, and I'd like to know your bus route, Tony, so we can enjoy that. And thanks for the call to Radio Times. Lauren, let me ask you, in terms of sending an apology, in person, email, snail mail, text, does it matter?
Yeah, I think it matters a lot. And in person is almost always best because it's the hardest. And if it's possible, the person you're apologizing to is going to know that. So if you duck that and apologize another way, that makes it a little harder. Now, sometimes it isn't possible. I think the more you can connect with someone directly. So telephone is kind of your next best thing. Skype, if you're dealing with someone around the world, so much the better. I think it's okay if you have to do a card, but a handwritten note is better. I think email starts to get really iffy, and I know I'm going to date myself here, but I don't think you should ever tweet or text an apology. And all those apology apps, while they're really cute, are a lot of fun if you're apologizing for something that doesn't matter very much.
Right.
But I think they're just deadly when there's real hurt feelings involved.
And Edward, if it's person to person, I mean, we get to see the body language. It goes along with the words,
body.
Right?
Yeah, we want to look at the face. We want to see how they're feeling. We want to see the empathy, the sorrow, the remorse. They've done studies even on when they used to video people or film people, much less when people send out tweets versus writing something,
right.
It flattens the affect. It flattens the emotion. So you think, gee, you're being very sincere as you're typing something. People don't get the message, the intent, as well as if you write it, because they can see the handwriting and the shakiness or whatever.
Lauren, this is your second book on apologies. I'm just curious about why you're so interested in them.
Well, because I think a well-delivered apology can be enormously healing.
And I think we can stand with some healing these days, whether it's in personal relationships, in business, in society. You know, we started the top of the hour talking about how snarky everybody's gotten. I think it's a shame. And I think if people were more effective in making apologies, if people found it easier, then it would be a lot easier for us to forgive one another, and ultimately the world would be a better place.
Mm. Do you see it that way?
No, I think it's an act of kindness. I think it's an act of love and caring. And I think that we are way too bitter, and we're way too mistrusting of each other. And it's always nice to have that bit of kind humanity back, which we miss in this culture.
We're almost out of time here, but I want to toss something to you, Edward, about not groveling. And I'm assuming there are probably some apologies that just go too far. We say, I'm a terrible person.
Yeah. Then it becomes, I mean, it's as much a defense. You know, when you go to the defense, it doesn't count because you're really talking about yourself. And when we start to grovel, it feels more about you than the person that you're really apologizing to. Now it feels like self-mutilation on some level. I mean, come
and
on.
And they're supposed to take care of you.
They're supposed to take care of you. So not only have you betrayed me, now I'm supposed to feel badly for you, and it becomes about you again. Doesn't work.
Well, I am not surprised we had so many phone calls about apologies. And my thanks to both of you, Lauren Bloom and Edward Monti, for joining us today on Radio Times. Thank you
Thank you, Marty. It's been
sure.
a pleasure.
Thank you.
What can I say, dear, after I say I'm sorry? What can I do to prove it to you? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to ever be mean to you. If I didn't care, I wouldn't feel like I do. I was all wrong, but right or wrong, I don't blame you. Why should I take somebody like you and shame you? I know that I made you cry, and I'm so sorry, dear. What can I say, dear, after I say I'm sorry?